This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. The youth are at the table, Barry, and they're doing all right. First three rounds are done and dusted. They were always sitting third after the second round.
Mariana's talking about the New Zealand youth team in China at the moment playing. What's the event's name?
It's called the World Youth Transnational Championships 2026 in Hefei, China, from the 3rd to the 9th of August. And our teams in the under 26 currently sitting in 5th place.
I don't know why they didn't invite you and I to play in the under 26 team, Mariana. What do you think that would be?
Too many wrinkles, I think.
So they're doing really well. Our team, which of course is Lysandra Zing and Zach Yan, Alex Mayer and Kevin Hu, and Leon Mayer and Michael Zhu. He's the ring-in we've got in the team from the United States.
Successful start. They had the North Island team.
That was held in New Plymouth over the weekend. Not a huge field. They had 22 tables. Apparently New Plymouth made a really great job of running this event. And the winners were Malcolm Mayer, who you can hear on the Bridge Zone, Jeremy Fraser-Hoskin, Martin Reed and Peter Newell. They won by about 7 VPs in the end. It was nearly a dead heat for second. Russell Wilson and Bob Hurley, Jenny Gibbons and Christine Gibbons just edging out your mates on the Weir team, Michael Weir and Matthew McManus, Jack James and Scott Smith. It was all pretty tight going with one match to go. It was sort of anybody's match. I'm pretty sure that the Fraser-Hoskin team was lying second going into the last match behind the Mao team, who wound up fifth. There was lots of changes in that last round.
That's right. It's that last round that can get you, can't it?
It absolutely can. Well done to New Plymouth for running a great event. There was another big event.
What's that?
Well, maybe not quite so big. The Gin Man will have thought so.
Oh, what happened?
So he played the Whakatane Restricted with Marcus Dudley and they came out on top. They averaged about 65 and that was just enough to get home. We'll probably hear about that when we talk to the Gin Man later on.
Good on him. It's been a long time of four drinks for him to be in the middle podium step.
You know, I had a look, and it's 370 Ks from Warkworth to Whakatane.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
He got enough prize money. I don't think it would have paid enough gas to get him halfway home. He was over the moon with winnings. That's all good.
She sent me a picture, and I was trying to figure out what the picture was, but now I know.
Of course. Quick ones, the Ashburton All Grades Pairs, won by Mary Buckland and Laura Griffin with an average of a bit over 64. There was also another tournament in Kerikeri. They had a 5A Open Pairs.
Who won that one?
John Buckleton and Hamish Brown, who averaged 65. Those scores are getting bigger. It seems like once upon a time, any time you had over 60, you had a chance to win. These days, you need to get closer to 65. Is that inflation or what?
And Buffleton's been having a great season this year, hasn't he? He's podiumed a fair bit.
Yep.
I wonder if he was wearing his Michael Jackson gloves.
What do his Michael Jackson gloves do?
I don't know. It might be his good luck charm, because he does. He wears
what are
those just fingerless gloves that he wears. Have you not seen him? You don't know what you've been missing, Barry. See, you're not very observant.
I've got to say, I've never in my whole life have I checked out John Buckleton's fingers.
Anyway, John, I got your back. The final minutes of our chat with Malcolm Mayer is coming up next.
It's impressive.
It's seriously impressive, right? It means that we can help you with your insomnia. Insomnia for years, so we can help you stay awake all night long. Seriously, though, the whole idea of it is that you can, as I say, drill down to see your strengths and weaknesses. And when you see the different aspects, let's say, for example, that the opponents had opened, you've interfered, and you end up declaring or perhaps defending, and you can see in that scenario, how are you going? Are you bidding too much? Are you being pushed around too much? And so that would be the kind of category you could look at. And it's broken down into par scores, games, and slams, whether it's contested or not. You can see how are you managing the opponent's intervention, how are you handling that, and how effective are you in your disruptive measures against the opponents when they open. So that's the type of depth I'm talking about. If you play any other event, all they give you is an overall plus or minus imps for the average across the set, but we are breaking that down into at least 18 categories. And as time goes by, as we've accumulated more and more data, then in fact, we can generate more in-depth reports. So this is only the beginning, and it is in fact a work in progress. We already think it's pretty good, and we've had very positive feedback, extremely positive feedback, and it's only going to get better. All you need to do is play.
Okay, well, thank you for coming on, Malcolm. Just wondering whether we might even talk to you again, maybe at the conclusion of this event, and see how it went, what the reaction has been.
The final minutes. Okay, well, that'd be great.
I mean, as long as I'm not
dust
in the wind by then, it'll be a pleasure.
Don't think any bridge players would be complaining about the program you're providing them with for nothing at the moment. Thanks, Malcolm.
Nice.
It's been a pleasure.
Emuriaki nei. Up next, it's The Gambler. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. What about you? Have you had any recent discussions with improvers?
Actually, we had a discussion on Friday, and I was talking to some novice players, junior players, about, I'm a bit scared whether I should put this on here, Mariana. I might end up getting myself into a power of trouble, about responding to partners opening bit of a suit when you have less than 6 points.
0 to 5.
Well, if
you've been reading the news articles on NZB, Richard Solomon was forced to respond with a two count.
Yes, I did see that. He started getting to the stage where he liked his two count.
That was an incredible read. So after you hear Barry, he's about to get on a soapbox, go and have a read of Richard's article. It's quite amusing.
The one that I was reading was by Andrew Robson, and he was recommending that sometimes you could respond with 4 or 5 points. If a partner opens one of a suit and you've got a decent sort of 5-card major, and there were, one of them was King Jack 9, 8 to 5 spades, and the other one was Queen Jack 10 to 5 hearts. Right. He was saying that sometimes there's two good things that can happen. Sometimes you'll steal the contract off the opponents when they should be playing it, and other times you might even be able to make game when partner has a really strong hand and you find a big fit in the major that you've got. Another hand he showed had less than 4 points, but it had 6 spades, queen, jack, 10, 9, 8, and another. And as he said, in spades, this hand is going to take 4 tricks. 4 tricks.
Yep.
No less. Queen, jack, 10, 9, 8. You're just going to knock out the ace king and you get 4 tricks. If you're not playing in spades, how many tricks do you think that hand's going to take? On a good day, it might get 1.
Yeah.
On a bad day, won't get any. So there you go. You know, next time you're sitting there with this terrible 4 count or whatever it is, but you've got a decent suit to bid, particularly a decent 5-card major, and you bid it at the 1 level, blame Andrew Robson. Don't blame me. I actually met Andrew Robson in Morocco when we played against. Very nice guy. And of course, we have had him on the Bridge Zone.
Yep.
I don't know how good your memory is, Mariana. Does it stretch back to the Andrew Robson days?
Yeah, I do remember talking to him. That was great. Does a hand like that look any sexier if your partner opens 1-0 trump?
Well, of course, it's a lot different with 1-0 trump because you can get away with bidding with less than a 4 count there because you can transfer. Yeah. When you respond at the 1 level with a 3 or a 4 count over a suit, you know, you can just imagine partner's next bid is going to be 2-0 trumps or something. But as he said, if you've got queen, jack, 10, 9, 8, to 6 spades and you respond to spades, it, whatever partner bids, you're just going to bid spades again and again and again if you have to at the lowest level. Well, I'm not going to say you're not going to get into too much trouble, but you're certainly going to take some tricks with your spade suit. I can see that you're interested in this. You're starting to think that these are some more hands that I can bid on.
No, I'm more thinking of if I didn't bid the hand and partner ends up in something and my hand goes down at dummy, the first thing they're going to say is, why didn't you bid those? So it's damned if you do and damned if you don't sometimes.
Then they gave me another hand where you think you had like a 4 count, but then this time you didn't have a 5-card major. You had just had a queen and a couple of jacks and maybe 2 4-card suits and no singleton or anything. That's the sort of hand that you probably should be passing on. Because that's the sort of hand where if you do take a bid, partner's going to look at that and say, what did you bid those for? Whereas on the other hand that you were talking about, they're going to say, why didn't you bid them?
That's right. And that's where the little angel on your left shoulder and the devil on your right shoulder is. Like with that pile of junk, the devil's going, do it, do it. Angel's going, no, don't, no, don't. The logical one in the middle, of course, is your head and your brain thinking.
The points are only a guide, you know. If you've got a decent suit and you can fit it at the one level, I reckon you've paid your money. Get in there and have a bid.
It's Judge Julie next.
Hear ye, hear ye. The court's in session. The court's in session. Now here come the judge. Here come.
Good morning, Judge Julie.
Good morning. How's everybody?
Not too bad. Well, I got a photo this morning from the children in Dunedin. It is snowing there and she's out catching snowflakes.
And apparently it's snowing in Christchurch.
Oh, starting. Really?
Heavy down the portholes. They had the ploughs out here.
Oh, yeah.
They said.
Where's the bailiff this morning? Is the bailiff out playing in the snow or what?
No. How good or bad it is depends on how much you like the temperature.
Okay, we were talking about slow play last week or the week before. Just wondering, so for your club directors, when you're directing a session, how long should they allow per board or for two boards? And should they have the clock on? What's the best way, do you think, for a club director to try and control the time a bit?
Okay, well, I might just take a bit of a step back. We have a list of stuff about procedure in the game. Slow play is one of the things that's procedural, and it is discourteous in a lot of ways. When players are slow, they are taking away time from the other people that are waiting. And so why should they get more time to play than somebody else? So it is not reasonable. And if the board's difficult, which is the most common thing you're going to be told, well, surely it's difficult for everyone. It's not just the one pair. So to be really clear, slow play impacts badly on everyone, and it is probably the biggest thing that the director has to deal with, and one of their duties is the smooth running of a session. Now, clocks are sort of dependent on a lot of things. We have a lot of playing directors in New Zealand, so that makes it very hard for them possibly to keep an eye on the time other people are playing because they're also concentrating on themselves playing. So there's a reasonable debate about clocks. We have fast sets of boards and a slow sets of boards. If the room is slow, then the clock has to slow down to the speed of the room. If the room is fast, then if we're using clocks, we don't often speed up because the slower players still take all the time that they can, right? So there's a lot of debate in this area. I was taught when I started to direct, because we didn't have clocks, because I'm really old.
They hadn't invented clocks when you started
directing. No, not quite like that, thank you, Barry. Just typical, isn't it? Anyway, that when about a third of the room or slightly less were playing, still playing, that generally you would move the room on, because the room sets the speed. The first round, you need to give people time. We had to collect the table money and put the names in and do things that you don't have to do now with the tablets. But we still have to set up the room, make sure the room is set up appropriately in that first round, and make sure everything is how we want it before we call that first move. So the first round takes longer than any other round in general. When we are calling the move, whether we're using clocks or not using clocks, if we have one pair still playing and everyone else is finished, then they are playing slower and they might have a difficult hand at that point. If we call the move, we will find that they catch up without having to do very much at all. And if the clock hasn't gone off, well, it doesn't matter. We can.
Well, how long do you set the clock for?
In New Zealand, we allow 7 minutes a board. Now, when I started, we had 6 minutes aboard and a half a minute for moving. So we had 6.5 minutes on the clock. But 7 minutes aboard. Now, a lot of people play faster than that. Okay. For visitors from overseas, you will find that they will find it difficult because, in general, they play slower than that.
Right.
Now, we don't want to be racing around after an entire room. So if we have a slow set of boards and everyone is slow, yelling and screaming about it actually just doesn't help anybody. Other than they all know that you're getting very frustrated as the director. We can't do much about if an entire room or three quarters of a room or half the room are playing slowly. We just have to slow down. But equally, if most of the room are playing fast, then perhaps we should be speeding up. You'd get easy sets of boards and you get absolute nightmare sets of boards. And we all have people that are playing that we know are going to be slow. And when I first started directing, I would follow. I didn't want to warn them unless it was their fault. So I'd stand there and I'd look at their boards that they were playing to try and assess who was slow and who wasn't, which can be quite difficult. If the same people are slow every week, believe me, it's not their opponent's fault. So how do we deal with it? We do it by being friendly and helpful. Somebody is slow, we're going to say, we need you to catch up. And then everyone at the table will say, oh, it's not my fault, right? But that's okay, because we're not warning anybody. We're not penalising anybody, okay? We're just saying we would like you to catch up because you are behind time and it's impacting on the tables around you. We don't care at that point exactly whose fault it is. It is something that we need the players to do, because it really isn't fair. If your table is a minute slow, the next tables are getting 6 minutes with those people at the table. All right. With multiple boards, it's a bit better than it used to be, because at least the board's gone on from the first one that you've played, and that's not impacting at the table behind you.
Yes.
Okay. So then we get the people who are still being, the worst people are the ones that start about a minute slow and never ever catch up that time, or half a minute slow. They are always that far behind. So the next time we'll just say, I still need you to catch up. Or you might say, because it's somebody that you know is always slow, you're falling behind again, so please try your best. And you can do things like take away their personal score sheet and move it to the next table if it comes to it. You don't want a tug of war. And believe me, I've had that happen at times in my life. You don't want them looking at the sheet. And if they're saying, oh, I've got to stay to approve the score, they don't. You can take the tablet to the next table to approve the score. So the things that the players themselves who are not fast can do is not write down the score. You see it on the tablet at the end. You can write it down then if you need to, or get your partner to. And if you are scoring, you don't keep a personal score sheet. They are things that help immediately. That you don't talk about the boards after the end of each board. You don't have a discussion. You wait till the end of the round, when you've played all of the boards in the round, and then you can take your time to talk because you've got time.
Yeah.
You don't have a right to take time to discuss the weather or how bad your partner played or how appallingly unlucky you were because your opponents did whatever when you are behind time. And you shouldn't be doing that just as a general rule. If you look at when people play that are quick, they play the boards. Then they talk about them at the end if they want to.
Yeah.
So they're things that your players can do immediately from beginners onwards. I mean, it starts at beginners. You will find there are people there that are talking in depth about what they should or shouldn't have done on the board right from the word go on the first board. And immediately they're creating problems with slow play on the way through. And people aren't aware of it either. I could be the slowest player in the world. I have no idea how much time lapses when I'm
there. Yeah.
I'm lucky. I'm not. Okay, but I could be. But
same with you, Barry. You're lucky or not.
Well, I don't know about lucky. What I'm really going to take away from today's discussion is Judge Julie must have started directing, I reckon, sometime in the 14th century before clocks were around.
Oh, she was using sundials.
Oh, they had sundials then. Did they have sundials back then, Julie?
Some of the things you can do is if someone is slow and they arrive, just say, look, I really hope I don't see you tonight or today, because you know you're slow. They know they're slow. Or I don't care what they say. They know they're slow. The other thing you can do is to say, look, I really don't want to keep doing this, following you around the room. And they really don't want you to keep following them around the room. So how about we look at what you're doing and see if we can make you faster without playing the hands faster, but doing the other things faster.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised how much that actually brings people in line. Now, the other problem we have is when someone takes a really long time on a board because they're thinking, and we are allowed to think, and then the opponent's called to say they're taking a long time. Well, they can do that. Obviously, if it impacts on everybody else, you're going to be warning them about slow play. But I've been called to the table when people have 5 minutes in hand to play. And in a teams match, people will take time on one board and catch up on the other boards. So it's not necessarily about a single point of time about being slow. It's about being consistently slow across all the moves and impacting on the people around you who get less time because you are taking longer for whatever reason. And that really isn't fair. Using a clock or not using a clock, I know players like to see how much time they've got, some of them. When you have a clock in the room, only half the table normally get to see it because of where it's placed. It's not that big a thing. I do know people really do like having a clock in play. As a director, I prefer not to because if the room's fast, I can speed up or slow down as it goes.
Okay. Judge Julie finishes her talk on slow play next week. Whaiakine. Coming up next, it's time for the Gin Club. That's juniors, intermediates and novices, and our man on the spot, Mr. Gin himself, it's Ross Longney.
Hey, Mr. Gin, I can see the shape you're in. Finger on your eyebrow.
Good morning, Ross. How's the gin world going?
Gin world's great. A fairly quiet weekend and even a quieter one next weekend, I fear. There was activity around the country, that's for sure. Up in Kerikeri, the New World Kerikeri Junior, they had 8 tables. Sandy Mahi and Anne Lovitch won that with an average of 67%. Oh. How's that? Hey, that's wonderful. Did you mention the Open tournament up there?
Yep, I did mention the winners of it.
Good victory for Auckland, hey, with Hamish and John. Now, down in Ashburton, they had an all-grades tournament. I wanted to check who the best non-open players were down there. Now, it was won by Mary Buckland and Laura Griffin from Ashburton. The top non-open players were Unita Denley and Pauline Prendergast from Timaru. Just an item that I thought was fascinating because we have our own card turner in New Zealand. Remember the book that we talked about a few weeks ago? Okay, Ryan Poskett, he was playing in virtually his first tournament. He got second in the third grade, you know, in the graded tournament, which was a great result from him. But how did Ryan come to be playing bridge is the little story I have. He was doing some community work and he became a card turner for Claire Riley from Ashburton, who has motor neurone disease. Now, Claire is a very keen bridge player. She plays 4 times a week, and she played in that tournament. Ryan was a community volunteer, and he was turning the cards for her. And he said to himself, this is a great game. So he picked it up about a year ago, and here he is a year later winning his division in the tournament.
Oh,
I thought that was a great,
cool,
great story of one person helping another bridge player, and then that bridge player getting that young man to play bridge. He doesn't play very often because he's a baker, so he can't play at night because, you know, those damn bakers, they have to get up about 2 o'clock in the morning, don't they?
They do. So that's a very good story, Ross. That's why we pay you the big money to get stories like that.
Investigative journalism, they call it.
Hey, look, and I'm pleased to see you've made it back from Whakatane. He's been carefully avoiding the Whakatane restricted because his modesty prevents him from mentioning it. Ross played with Marcus Dudley and they averaged just over 65. Or 66, was it, to win at Whakatane? Well done.
Thank you very much.
How cool is that?
We were like half a board ahead of Liz Wilcock and lovely Grace Wang from Rotorua.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we were just ahead of them, and it was a lovely competition, and Marcus and I spent a lot of time talking to Grace after the tournament. Hey, it was quite funny because when I got to the tournament, Sue Gordon welcomed, you know, everybody to the club. And she said, now we have a special visitor today. People have come, she said, from Gisborne and Warkworth and 2 of us from Waitomo. Barry, you'll be pleased about that. And today we have the gin man with us. Mr. Gin is here. And it was quite a nice little welcome. So everybody was interested in that. And quite a few people talked to me afterwards and got connected up to the bridge zone.
I've done the calculations. It's 370 Ks, Mariana, from Warkworth to Whakatane. And I reckon the prize money he won, $3 a litre, I reckon it wouldn't have even got him halfway home.
Barry, when you get to my age, every dollar you spend, you just think, I'm spending the kids' money.
Of course.
Not spending my money. I'm spending the inheritance. So go for it. The top intermediate pair were Rex Tulloch and Joyce Reed. And top junior pair were Alison Barr and Caroline Safati. They were all locals from Whakatane. A wonderful tournament. Barry, you would have loved it there. Five different soups to choose from for lunch.
Which one did you have?
Leek and potato, Italian meatballs. And
I went back for a repeat. Okay.
Yeah. I went back for a third one because I wanted to try the Thai, but it was all gone.
I did a bit of stalking, Mariana, and I noticed that in 7 days last week, the gin man played in 13 sessions of bridge.
Come on. You know,
but it's true. 7 days at the end of July, 13 sessions of bridge. He's the Iron Man of bridge from Forkworth.
Watch out. You'll be dope tested soon.
You could say I was quite keen. Yeah. Just a little side. Heather Young from Whakatane says hi to Claire from Walkworth. Oh, and also another really nice thing. You know how you toss for north-south?
Yep.
On each table, they had a real penny from the 50s and 60s. I thought that was a lovely touch.
I hope you didn't bring one of those home with you.
No. And said, how, do you lose any? No, they always stay there. I was playing with Marcus Dudley, and he's really nice to play with. Anyway, but his mother was playing, Bettina, and then they were sitting at a table, and Flo said, oh, I'm Marcus's grandmother.
Oh, really? Three generations.
And I said, are you Bettina's mum? She said, no, I adopted Marcus as my grandchild. I was his grandmother because his grandmother had died, and so she took over the grandmother role. So almost effectively, we were three generations playing in the one tournament. Oh, and we had to do a bit of research because I was asked, what is that Mr. Gin song Mariana dug up? And who's it by?
It's Mink DeVille singing Spanish Stroll. He used to be one of our fave singers.
And one more, Wyke and I multi-grade. They had 20 tables at that tournament. I don't know who the non-open player were. Lorraine Gaffney and Vicky Young, both from Wyke and I, won that. Thursday this week, online, Levin Open Tournament. That's a nice one for Ginnies to enter. And then the big one for the North Island anyway is the Cambridge Sixers. And they got 32 teams into that. Last year when we played it, somebody said it's the biggest tournament outside of Congress.
Catch up with us next week. The Gin Man leads you out with the Gin Club motto.
Observa omne, neminem time. Respect all, fear none. Have a good week.
That's all we've got time for this week, folks. Happy bridging wherever you are, and we shall see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international, nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.